At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the touchy-feely voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Unfortunately so, touchy-feely. Do you care to elaborate, Matthew?
Well, I'd just like to touch on the next thing that we're going to be talking about, if that's okay.
Before you do that, no, I want to touch on something, firstly, that's really important that we touch on before we get going in this podcast. That's right, we've listened back over some of our podcasts and we've realised there's certain things that we say far too often. And in my case, it turns out that I want to touch on everything.
Very touchy.
Very touchy.
You're just very touchy, which isn't such a bad thing. Very affectionate gentleman. Mm. But you do have good diction,
good
Richard.
What now?
Good diction, good choice
diction.
Of words.
Yes,
good is vocabulary something. Is probably what I should say.
It is interesting. And you don't realise when you're doing this, and we sit here day after day just pumping out content, very little of it that's of any use whatsoever. But it is when you listen back, and we do make a point of listening back, because again, we want to offer the best we possibly can, and you do realise there's certain words, I've got certain ones that I've become very aware of. Touching upon is a big thing that I've realised I say far too often. The other one is I'll say, do you know what? And then I'll start a sentence, which is, again, it's just nonsense. Why don't you just talk? Why don't you just say what it is that you want to say?
Yeah, you do say that, actually. There was a really good one the other day I was listening back to, and I can't remember who it was with, but it was when you get to your end of podcast question, which is a big thing for you, you know, what has goalkeeping given you? But there was one guy you asked, I can't remember which goalkeeper it was, and we get to the end of the podcast, always the same question that we ask. It's a good question, and sometimes the goalkeepers don't know whether to answer the question with a long answer or a short answer, but often the question tends to get a really good answer. So what the question is, So the goalkeeper was like, is he going to get to the point here or what?
Well, this is it. We've gone over the pods that we've listened to. We have analysed them. We are now going to work on those things. I'm not going to be touching upon as many things moving forward because we have got some quality content that will not only be coming out today, but we do have several podcasts lined up this weekend. I'm going to give you a sneak preview, Matthew. I think you know because you've done a lot of research on these. But we've got, on Sunday, we'll be recording pods with Paddy Kenny, with Mr. Sam Johnson and Mr. Carl Akimi. So they're going to be coming out in the following weeks. And also, we do have a pod that's coming out this Friday, I'm right to believe.
Yes, we do. We have Scott Carson coming out on Friday. That will be available to our patrons on patreon.com/goalkeepersunion. Quite a long one with Scott. The whole thing will be ad-free on Patreon. It will be on two parts via your free platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever it is that you listen to the podcast on. The first part will be available next Monday, and then the second part will be available the following Monday, Richard.
Indeed, as always, massive thank you to you patrons out there. I know we had a few more this week, and it is appreciated. You do support us, so a big thank you for that. We've got a big show coming up, Matthew.
We do indeed, and I'm going to revert to something that I say in every single podcast too. If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so on Twitter at GKUnion. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. There was some Champions League action this week, Richard, but without Dean Henderson. He'd played in the away game to Istanbul Başakşehir, but he did not play the home fixture. David De Gea back in nets for United.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting that he decided to do this. Obviously, it was a big game for United, needed the win, which then makes you, or for me, it certainly makes me think that when it comes to that, he still trusts David De Gea that much more than Dean Henderson. You know, this was obviously a big, big game for him. Again, had they have been defeated here, then it would have put qualification in jeopardy. So he has gone for his strongest lineup, which again, I don't know, I was led to believe, or you get the impression there's very, very little between the two. And of course, there are now murmurings coming out that Dean Henderson may well go on loan again in January. But this, for me, was quite significant, the fact that he's gone with David De Gea over Dean Henderson. And in fairness, David De Gea had a good game, although at one point I was led to believe that maybe he didn't when I was listening. I was actually watching it on Sky Sports News because I was watching a lot of the other games and the other commentary. And when they spoke about the goal that he conceded, I thought, oh, he's had a horror show again because of the commentary that I heard. I've seen the goal and I can't quite figure out what the commentary was referring to. We'll talk about that in a minute. But very significant for me, the fact that they played David De Gea over Dean Henderson, because I did think this would be a game that Henderson would get.
Before the game, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was quizzed as to whether Dean Henderson was going to play. He said, Dean wants to stay at Manchester United and play for Manchester United. I can't see the logic in him only having potentially one more appearance before Christmas. Do you know how many games we've got? So I disagree completely if tomorrow is make or break for Dean, because some journalists were suggesting that if De Gea came in, was that a case of, listen, Dean Henderson, you are not going to be playing for Manchester United in the foreseeable future. There are suggestions that maybe in January he could go on loan. Celtic are a club he's been heavily linked to. Does this not still say to Dean Henderson, listen, when the big games, the big, big games come along, you're not my man?
That's what it would say to me. And I'm sure that's how he will have perceived it. Now, of course, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to say what he needs to say in order to keep both happy. And right now, will Dean Henderson be happy? Again, without knowing him, we can only read between the lines. We can only see what we've seen in previous years. He's always been a number one. You know, he was so aggressive in getting himself out on loan very early on. Loan. Played every single game. He wants to play games of football. He doesn't want to sit on the bench. So the fact that he's now come back to be the number two, we spoke about this so many times. This isn't the right scenario. I cannot understand, you know, for the amount of money they are spending on their goalkeeping department, when you consider the amount they're spending in wages. And I can't imagine it's a harmonious goalkeeping department. Can Romero be happy? Absolutely not. Can Dean Henderson be happy getting such limited game time when there might be the opportunity of becoming England's number one if you're playing regularly? Absolutely not. And I'm sure that he could have got a loan. He obviously could have gone back to Sheffield United, but I'm sure he could have got a loan to another Premier League team and again expressed himself in a slightly different way. I just think that, yes, I understand that managers need to put the club first. And I've seen this in so many different situations this summer in particular. But I think with someone like a Dean Henderson, you have to look at it slightly differently. Look at it from a business standpoint, as well as just let's have two or three great goalkeepers in the building. For me, I think it's more harmonious having De Gea and Romero, and this is just me looking as an outsider, and then having a Dean Henderson elsewhere, building his career even further, becoming England's number one, than it is having him as number two for the season. It just doesn't make a lot of sense unless you're going to have the transition at some point. But if anything, it's moving further away from that, which is huge credit to David De Gea.
Yeah, well, that's part of it as well, isn't it? Just three appearances for United so far this season for Dean Henderson. You could argue he's been brought back purely to reinvigorate David De Gea, who has been pretty good this season, and he's not going to be happy with that, Dean Henderson. That's not why he went back to Manchester United, so another goalkeeper could improve.
This is where, I mean, I talk about this a lot, in that you have so many different agendas at a football club. And what I mean by that is you have the agenda of the owner, who wants to... Maybe slightly different in the case of a Manchester United, but normally the owners want to build assets on the pitch, and they effectively will see players as numbers on a spreadsheet. You know, can you drive value into them? So you'll have the agenda of the owner, you'll have the agenda of the manager, who, look, managers are only three or four games from getting the sack. Doesn't matter how well you're doing. If Ole Gunnar Solskjaer loses the next four or five games, he's getting the sack. So their agenda is very short term. He's not overly worried about Dean Henderson becoming England's number one for the next 10 years, because that won't necessarily impact him at Manchester United. And this is throughout the club, because then you've got the physios who've got their agenda, the fitness coach who've got their agenda, the goalkeeper coach who's got their agenda. And of course, we are looking at it from the goalkeeping perspective, the goalkeeper's perspective, which for Dean Henderson at the moment, this season's doing nothing for him, as far as I'm concerned. And something will change. Whether it happens in January, I'm not sure. But my guess is that if he isn't number one by the start of next season, I will be surprised if he's at Manchester United.
Okay, we'll touch on the goal. Mm-hmm. The free kick, Denis Turic with the pretty good left foot free kick. Now, the argument on BT Sport between Rio Ferdinand and Paul Scholes was a classic case of, I'll tell you what, if you got in front of the cameras now and you interviewed him, he'd say he wasn't happy with that because it was a left footer, an in-swinger. It was going towards him. What did you make of that one?
When I heard it on Sky Sports News, I was like, oh, he's obviously had a stinker again. Let me check it out. And as soon as I saw it, I could not relate what I was hearing on Sky Sports News, the punditry, to what I'm actually seeing. He almost keeps it out. Now, the only argument you can make is that he's dived slightly backwards on him, but I'm going to try and describe this. It's never easy over a podcast to try and describe the positioning of something like this. But of course, the positioning that he's taking up will be square to the ball. And also, because you're slightly over to the left-hand side of the goal, the angle of your dive is going to be backwards ever so slightly when you square up to the ball like that. Now, had the ball have curled the other way, had it been a right footer curling it from in to out, that changes the whole dynamic. But the fact that it's gone out to in, if he'd have dived towards the post and not towards inside of his goal, he wouldn't have got anywhere near it because the ball's still coming back in on him. But the fact that he's been able to get a hand to it is only because he's dived into the net. And if anything, that's why he's ended up getting a bit of stick, because he's effectively saved it once it's gone behind the line. He would have done better almost diving straight across the line, getting nowhere near it, the ball going in the goal, no one says anything. It's only the fact that he's effectively clawed it out from being in the goal that anyone says anything. But again, it's the same thing I feel that we say a lot on the show. It was frustrating to hear some of the comments because no one was able to really break it down as to why it looked like it did. Because it was a very unusual piece of footage. You don't see that often, that a free kick's curled in and clawed out. But one of the big reasons for that is it's not often a left footer that will take a free kick from that position. You consider it's more often a right footer that goes up, down, over the wall and in. And that's what I'm saying. The fact that it's curled the other way, that then obviously changes the whole situation. So for me, look, I don't think David De Gea had any chance. I don't think many goalkeepers in the world save that, if any. And it's only the fact that it looks a bit odd and looks a bit unusual that he ended up getting a bit of criticism.
Yep, his opposite number in that game as well, McGunnock, made a bit of an error to gift Bruno Fernandes a second. Not really too much to analyse on that one, I think, just a cross that came in. He slipped. It was an error. We'll move on and actually go to the game in Turin between Juventus and Ferencvaros, who very nearly pulled off what would have been a momentous victory at the Juventus Stadium. Denis Dibush, the Ferencvaros goalkeeper, pulled off a series of saves. Incredible stop from a Bernardeschi volley onto the post. He denied Ronaldo when Ronaldo tried to round him. Also a brilliant tip over from Bentancur from range. And then 92 minutes in, he lets slip an Alvaro Morata header for the winner.
And I felt for him because you mentioned he was inspired. He was brilliant all night and a real variety of saves. Really big frame he's got, but he moves well. He got down quickly a couple of times for a couple of those saves. The one where Ronaldo's gone to go round him, brilliant goalkeeping. You know, so often you see a goalkeeper miss time that, bring down a player, give away a penalty and so on and so forth. But I thought that his reading of the game was very good. I was just really impressed. And even the goal, at first you look at it and you say, oh, it's an error because it's kind of gone through him. I think it's more unlucky than an error. You know, it's kind of a header down near his feet and he's a big guy. So for him to get down is quite difficult. And he's obviously tried to move his leg, tried to close his legs. And you're just hoping for a bit of luck that it hits you and goes off in the right direction. And eventually it's kind of hit him. It's ricocheted a few times and ended up sort of creeping over the line. So again, it's one that doesn't look great, but for me, more unlucky than an error.
The Ronaldo one, where Ronaldo's tried to round him. I know that when we do the favourite save for a goalkeeper on our feature interviews, we often say, oh, it could be a cold Tuesday night at Stoke or a reserve game that no one was watching. That was your favourite save. But as a goalkeeper, and you can speak openly about this, is there something in making a save from a player like Ronaldo? The fact that Ronaldo's tried to round him has been unsuccessful. Is that something Dibush will appreciate more in his career or even in that particular game and think, yes, I denied Ronaldo on that occasion? Does that matter? Does that come into your head?
I think it can do. I mean, it did with me. Certainly, I remember, you know, a couple of the games that I played, the save I made from Wayne Rooney that sticks in my mind. Now, was it one of the best saves ever made? Probably not. But the fact that it was a Wayne Rooney strike and I made a decent save, it did with me. But then I guess I was a, you know, Manchester United fan as a kid. So that game had certain significance. I've got no doubt this game will have had huge significance. And the fact that it's Ronaldo, of course. I'm sure to an extent that particular save would have meant a little bit more to him, because I can't imagine many goalkeepers one-on-one with Ronaldo actually do have the chance to make the save.
Couple of other bits in the Champions League. Great save from Alisson from a surprise shot from Gerson's in Liverpool's defeat to Atalanta, and a very good double save from Manuel Neuer in Bayern Munich's victory over Salzburg.
Yeah, great save from Alisson. It's an interesting one because we spoke about this off-air, and this is a classic one of, he makes a save, I'm saying it's a great save, we're saying it's a great save. If that goes in, he gets blamed because it's a near post. But for me, it's just a nice lesson in being set at your near and not starting to creep? You know, how many times do you see it where a goalkeeper will just start to creep thinking this is coming across me or this is going to be a cross, and before you know it, you've got done at your near post. The fact that he takes up a true position, he sets, he's not too close to the near, but he has got what I would call a true position. You know, he's not cheating. And it was great reaction, because by the way, that was absolutely struck with such venom into the near post, into the top corner as well, near post. He couldn't have struck it any better. And the fact that Alisson's ready, set, he's able to get up and a really strong hand, almost back on him slightly, to claw it round the post. Brilliant save. A lot of core strength, a lot of strength in the shoulders in order to make that save. And to touch on Neuer, yeah, phenomenal. I mean, again, such a big guy. When you see him move here, and it must have been so frustrating for Salzburg, 3-0 down and a chance to get back in the game. The first save is very good. It was a save that, I hate using the expression you'd expect him to make, but you would expect Manuel Neuer to make. Again, big frame, sets well, gets to his left, big powerful parry, which he's well known for. Doesn't go very far because it obviously hits one of the Salzburg players and it just drops to him. But for me, it was the speed at which he gets off the floor. And for someone as big as Manuel Neuer, he's still so agile and so powerful. And the way in which he gets up the floor with pace is why he's able to make the second save. And you can actually see when he makes the second save, he pumps his fists in delight. Yeah, fantastic save.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
It is that time again, Richard. It is your championship rundown.
It is indeed. I make it well known that the championship is my favourite league. Am I allowed to say that?
You're allowed to say that.
It is my favourite league. Yeah, lots going on this week in the championship. A full list of fixtures on Tuesday and Wednesday. So to run through them very quickly, Luton drew with Birmingham. Good performances from both goalkeepers here. Sluga making an excellent save towards the end. Neil Etheridge, some brilliant saves, although potentially at fault for the goal. We're going to discuss that very shortly. QPR beating Rotherham 3-2. Stoke going down 2-3 to Norwich. Tim Krul coming off injured in this one. A big talking point at the end of this game. Something that we'll analyse shortly. Wickham and Huddersfield 0-0. Two clean sheets on the bounce, that, for Rocky. We call him Rocky.
Nice. Allsop.
Ryan Allsop, indeed. Two clean sheets on the bounce and a return for Ryan Schofield in this one. Barnsley 0, Brentford 1. Another clean sheet for David Rea. Another very good save for David Rea as well. Preston 0, Blackburn 3. Another clean sheet for Kaminski. Another win for Kaminski. He's actually got a really good record when he plays. Bournemouth 2, Forest 0. Mr. Begovic once again with a clean sheet. Great save. Top right-hand corner. An important moment in the game. And we move on to Wednesday. Borough 3, Derby 0. That's 5 clean sheets in 6 for Marcus Bettinelli. Millwall 1, Reading 1. Coventry 1, Cardiff 0. Really bad injury here to Marco Morosi at the end of this one. 96th minute. I think he's fractured his cheekbone in this. So we do wish him well. Bristol City 0, Watford 0. Good performances here from both goalkeepers, Ben Foster and Dan Bentley. Dan Bentley now 3 clean sheets in a row. Made an excellent save second half, although the commentary wasn't quite what we were hoping for. This is something we will touch upon very shortly, Matthew. And last but not least, Swansea drawing with Sheffield Wednesday and another goalkeeping injury. Kieran Westwood coming off after about 15 minutes with what looked like a groin strain in this one.
Lovely, lovely stuff, Richard. You're getting better at that. And you mentioned Neil Etheridge conceding from Matty Pearson, but making a very, very good save from James Collins in the second half. One of many, as you said. Aitor Karanka, the Birmingham boss, did say that Neil Etheridge belongs in the Premier League after that game. Talk about the saves and the potential error for the goal.
Yeah, some fantastic saves. There's one in particular that we wanted to talk about, a ball to the far post. And it's one of those, we've all experienced it, where it's going towards the far post, it's been cut square, and you're scrambling across the goal to try and make yourself as big as you can. And actually, as he starts to scramble, he slips. But for me, it was the power that he showed, that as he's almost on the floor, he's able to spring up again and fire himself to his left-hand side. And as the player comes in and strikes it down into the bottom left-hand corner, it's a goal all day. How he gets to it, I've got no idea. Not only that, he actually manages to hold it, but that little bit of explosive power to get himself to his left was fantastic. And it was an excellent performance. But There were a few question marks. When I first saw the goal, when I actually watched it several times, paused it at the point of impact, and to try and explain the situation for those that haven't seen it, it was a cross that's come in, and it was a snapshot from very close in. Now, for me, when you pause it, he's only about 6 yards out, and it's a volley from about 6 yards out. So it ends up being a reaction save. But where I think Neil Etheridge had a slight problem was just his positioning. He was very low. Now, he plays quite low. He's a really powerful, powerful athlete of a goalkeeper. So he plays quite low. But in this situation, with the ball then coming that little bit higher, and if you can imagine, his chest is over, his hands are low, hands below the knees, to get his body up into a position to make the save, there's a lot of movement that needs to happen. And the coordination needs to be absolutely spot on. And as he's got himself up in order to get a hand to it, he just mistimed it ever so slightly. And the ball ends up coming back across him and it hits the post and goes in. So you could argue unfortunate to an extent, but maybe just a slight tweak in body positioning might have made it a slightly easier save.
You mentioned Sluger's save at the end of that as well. Simon Sluger denying Ivan Suncic of Birmingham. That is a Croatian denying a Croatian.
Well, there you go.
I wonder if that's the first time that's ever happened in the Championship.
I mean,
who knows? If you know, please do let us know. You also mentioned Kieran Westwood, who we spoke about in the last podcast, coming back in for Sheffield Wednesday ahead of Joe Wildsmith, ahead of Cameron Dawson, goes and gets injured in only his second game back against Swansea.
Yeah, he's not had the best injury record. You know, you look at the amount of games that he's been involved in that he's ended up coming off, whether that be in the warm-up before a game or being substituted, it is quite a large number. He's certainly not had the best of luck with injuries. And this is a frustrating one for him, the fact that he has been brought back in by Tony Pulis. It's only his second game. I'm sure it's a blow to Tony Pulis because he made it very clear that he wanted to give Kieran Westwood an opportunity. And if it is a groin strain, which it appeared to be, then obviously you're looking at a number of weeks it'll be out. But once again, we talk about the life of a goalkeeper, both Joe Wildsmith and Cameron Dawson, who both had had their games this season, but suddenly thought they might be looking for opportunities elsewhere. Once again, they're back in the mix.
Speaking about the life of a goalkeeper, Ryan Schofield came in for Huddersfield's game at Wickham, the goalless draw that you mentioned. That was his first game in more than a year. Joel Pereira, on loan from Manchester United, he had his debut last time out in that defeat to Stoke, which we spoke about on the last podcast. This is all because Ben Hamer, the first choice, is currently self-isolating with COVID-19. The manager, Carlos Corberan, said it was all about using different keepers with different strengths for different games. He kind of waffled on when he was trying to discuss this. Do you buy into this? Because Pereira comes in, then Schofield comes in. If Schofield plays well, does Pereira come back? If Pereira's in and he plays well, does Ben Hamer come back? I mean, you're using three goalkeepers already.
It's an interesting concept for me. I mean, we talk a lot about certain goalkeepers fitting certain styles of play, and I 100% agree with that. The question is, then can a Huddersfield transition that quickly from one style to another? Now, if they can, and you've got two different goalkeepers that fit these two different styles, then I get the thinking behind it. It's just very rare that you see this. And more often than not, if you've got a goalkeeper that plays a certain way, you feel like if it was a case of, okay, we're not going to play out so much today, then they can adapt to playing a different way. So look, it's very, very rare for me. I don't think goalkeepers particularly enjoy it. I think as well, there's an element, and I wanted to touch on this in this pod, where a goalkeeper can get a run of games and actually, you know, get their feet under the table, so to speak, and really start to be embedded in that team, feel a bit more at home when playing with the defence that's in front of you. When if you're chopping and changing it all the time, I'll never buy into the concept that that works when it comes to goalkeeping. Because from what I've seen, the goalkeepers that are consistent and get a run of games, they do seem to play that little bit better for me than goalkeepers that are in and out. It's very tough if you come in for the odd game every now and then in isolation. I had to do it myself several times where you'd often be a number two and you might have to step in when a goalie gets sent off or gets a small injury. And it's tough to come in for one or two games to get the pace of it because it won't match what you're doing in the 23s or the B team reserves, whatever they call it now. It won't match it. So to come in and play the odd game, I think it's very tough and it's a big ask for a goalkeeper to do that. My gut says to me that they do really like Schofield. I know that they really like him. He's very highly rated. He has been injured, and I get the impression he's now coming back to fitness. Of course, the fact they're given in this game, and I can see that in time it will be a fight between Hamer and Schofield. That's what my gut tells me, and I just wonder whether Pereira, he has had a chance or two, maybe not quite gone as well as he would have hoped. I just wonder whether it's more that, but the manager is obviously wanting to come out and give real positive PR to both goalkeepers.
Yeah, it does always seem to be conducive, doesn't it, with teams that are struggling, though. I can think back to that ill-fated Derby campaign around 2008-09, whenever it was, and they used a whole bunch of keepers. Fulham, we spoke about a few seasons ago, with Fabbri, with Bettinelli, with Sergio Rico, who played as well. And Swindon we're seeing as well. Kovar was back in favour for Swindon this week. They won one, but then lost to Lincoln, with arguably him being at fault. So what happens now? Does Joe Fryer come back in? I don't know. It can just go on.
I think it often is, you know, goalkeepers are a scapegoat. So often, and again, you guys listening in, I'm sure you've all experienced this at some point, a run of results start going wrong. More often than not, the first one to get chopped is the goalkeeper. And I don't know. I just think that if you're a manager, to put your faith, and I'm very strong on this, in that when it comes to your goalkeeper department, having your set 1, 2, 3, I think makes more sense, because I think then you have goalkeepers who know their jobs, they know their position. That's not to say that a 2 can't become a 1, of course, but I just think for that harmony and having that goalkeeping unit to be operating at its very best, personally, I think that makes most sense. Again, as always, interested to hear what you guys think, but yeah, from my experience, that's certainly worked well.
Commentary Corner. 2 commentary corners spotted by you, Richard. You sent these to me because you were furious. Sat at home, swilling your vino tinto, not happy with this at all.
Apoplectic with rage, I was. It was.
We've got a couple. So we've got one involving Dan Bentley and Gary O'Neill in that game you spoke of between Bristol City and Watford. But the first one, Jamie Mackey, who was on Gillette Soccer Special. It was the game between Stoke City and Norwich City. And it was a free kick or a corner, I think, that was floated in. Mike McGovern, who had come on for Tim Krul, got the free kick. Jamie Mackey was not happy with this, and neither was Jeff Stelling, for that matter. Jamie Mackey said, "What's he done? Nudge. A little nudge. Poor keeper. The keepers get all sorts now, Jeff. It's unbelievable. Look, he's gone up. Keepers? No. He's nowhere near the ball. Now, they get everything, the keepers. I'd be frustrated as a striker."
What did Jeff say?
Jeff basically concurred and said, "I agree."
Yeah, so for those who haven't seen it, ball goes in the air, last minute of the game, and you can understand, I will say, just for complete transparency, I'm not necessarily going to comment on whether it's a foul or isn't a foul. What I will say, because look, it is soft, the ball's gone up, you can see that McGovern is looking to get it, but where I think he's very clever, and I touched on this recently, I'm sure I did in one of the podcasts, where I think he's very clever is the moment he gets a small nudge, he drops like a sack of potatoes onto the floor, which I think you're sometimes better off doing that now. I wonder whether he's actually listened into the podcast, because I think when there's a ball like that, and it was a horrible, horrible ball to deal with, that's just vertically in the air and it's dropping from a height and you've got people surrounding you, the moment that he's nudged, now whether it's a foul or not, again, that's up for debate. The moment he's nudged, he makes it look like a foul. So as soon as he did it, I knew he'd get the foul. Now, you can imagine that everybody's surrounding the referee and asking for the goal and saying it should be a goal. And I can see why Jamie Mackey and Jeff Stelling have said what they've said. But at the same time, how many times have we discussed it on this podcast where we've said it's a foul and it's not given as a foul because goalkeepers have been too honest? This is the equivalent for me of when a striker goes through and doesn't get tripped but goes down for a penalty and still gets the penalty, and people claim that it's clever, you know, intelligent play to go down when you get the smallest contact in the box to get the foul, to get the penalty. I think you could argue this is similar to that. For a goalkeeper that's coming up to get the cross, it doesn't take a lot in order to make you drop the cross. If you've got your arms fully extended, the smallest nudge on your arms will mean that you drop the ball and it looks dreadful. So sometimes I think goalkeepers being that little bit more intelligent and going down and making it look even more of a foul isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Okay, well, Darren Moore, the Doncaster manager on the Quest highlights, also said the goalkeeper has got to give the ref a bottle of wine here. He's got away with one. Gary O'Neill thought that Dan Bentley didn't get away with one, but thought the save he made wasn't as good as what you thought it was.
Yeah, when I saw this save in real time, I was going crazy over this save because it was a strike only a few yards from where Dan Bentley was. He absolutely smashed it, going in the roof of the net. Now, Dan Bentley set quite low. For him to move his body in the way he did and get his hands up as quickly as he did, phenomenal reactions. And the bit that bugged me was a comment about it being a good height. The classic cliche, good height. In fact, there was two cliches. One was, oh, if it's a yard either side, he scores. And the other cliche was good height. And for me, how on earth can that be a good height when you're having to move your body in such a big way in order just to get fingertips again, he's like a contortionist in terms of what he's done and the speed of the reactions, the power he showed to get himself and get fingertips. I don't think many goalkeepers make this save. I think the fact that Dan Bentley is as agile, flexible as he is and is as powerful as he is why he's made this save. And it just bugged me that it was so underrated. Actually, Ben Foster didn't do us any favours here, because Ben Foster did an interview and actually made the point that the player should score and kind of played down Dan Bentley's role in it, which is what set the pundits off. And unfortunately, they made the comments that they made. But I just wanted to make the point that it was a fantastic save from Dan Bentley. In the end, I say save them a point. I actually thought that Bristol City probably deserved the 3 points on the whole. And Ben Foster did play very well as well. But this, for me, outstanding save.
Yeah, Domingos Quina, the player that he denied, and 3 clean sheets in a row now for Dan Bentley. Ben Foster did make a really different save, didn't he? The sort of double jump save to deny Rowe as well. That was a good save.
It was. It was a. So he's kind of committed to the fact that it was going to be a header or a shot that was going to come in. So he effectively did the star jump. He's moved across the goal. He's done the star jump. Then, of course, the ball is mishit and it kind of fires up into the air and it's dropping over him. So actually, as he's done the star jump, he's had to change his body shape in midair in order to claw it out for the corner. Again, it's a good example of goalkeeping where it isn't black and white. It isn't always textbook. And sometimes you just have to find a way to keep the ball out of the net.
Okay, touch on the EFL, shall we? Best of the rest, as you like to call it. Jack Bonham, good again in a win for Gillingham over AFC Wimbledon. A tough night for Ben Amos at Burton. They went down 4-2. I thought he was unlucky with a couple of the goals. Bristol Rovers, there was a great moment in their game at Wigan. We seem to mention Bristol Rovers and their goalkeepers in every single podcast, but Ansi Yakola, bit of a goal mouse scramble. We'll talk about that in a second. Morecambe stopper Jake Turner felt for him because he made a great save from a very good free kick from Ash Hunter, who then went and scored twice with a couple of absolute worldies. Scott Davies, worth mentioning as well. He's playing very well for Tranmere at the moment. 6 wins in a row in all competitions for them and 2 clean sheets on the bounce for him.
There you go. That was a brief rundown from you there. You can do the best of the rest. This is what we're going to do moving forward, I think. This makes sense. I do want to touch on the Bristol Rovers. For those that haven't seen it, it was quite comical in that he's gone round Yakola. Dreadful shot, by the way. Should have scored. There's a man on the line, and how he hasn't put it...
Well, if he'd hit it either side, there you go.
Cliche. There you go. If only he'd hit it either side. But it was the fact then Yakola's running back, and the ball suddenly lands at his feet, and it's the panic. He's facing his own goal, and you can tell he doesn't really know what to do, so he just fires it to his right, and it comes back off his own player, causes a huge goal mouth scramble, and thankfully they get it away, but it was quite a comical moment.
You would have liked the end of the Quest highlights last night as well. Do you know what they said?
Oh, go on.
We'll leave you with some early auditions for pantomime season after an interesting couple of nights for the EFL's keepers.
Really?
And then, to be fair, it was... a couple of errors, but nothing that was too out of the ordinary. Really clutching at straws to finish off the show. But again, another example of utter nonsense, really.
And this is what bugs me. And maybe we don't help in the idea of them and us, but it does feel like that. When I'm listening to Jamie Mackey and the way he's talking about goalkeepers, like we're a different species, you know, and that's the bit. It's like at the end of it, let's make fun of the goalies. Like, I don't know. This is the bit that really gets to me. And again, I mean, look, I know it's a broken record, but at some point we need somebody. We need somebody to be able to fight back a little bit, bring that goalkeepers union together and actually have a bit more of a voice, because it is frustrating that we are still seen as separate to what's going on to a large extent. And you're right, there were so many good goalkeeping performances once again over the last couple of days. Very few errors. And even the errors we're talking about now, it's only because of the scrutiny being what it is. You know, we're talking about the Neil Etheridge moment being a potential error. It's not a bad error by any means. And he's actually a 9 out of 10 performance again. Fantastic performance. But that's because we're able to break it down. But of course, it's very, very easy for people just to generalize and look at things like that. And all of a sudden, now to have a 6 or 7 out of 10 performance for a goalkeeper, it's getting harder and harder because the scrutiny is increasing, but not necessarily with the quality.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
A quick keeper caper before we part for today. Richard, Liam Roberts of Walsall conceded a 30-yard thunderbolt from Newport Scott Twine.
Yeah, horrible moment. And again, watching this, I know a lot of you guys would be similar to me watching Sky Sports News or Soccer Saturday or whatever the show's called now, where it's in real time. And when they mentioned that a goal's been scored and they went over to show the goal, the reaction from Jeff Selling and whoever else was on the panel, yeah, it was quite damning. And it was just one of those moments, a shot from distance. It's obviously not a great pitch. And it's bounced 4 or 5 yards in front of him. Now, I must say, by the way, Liam Roberts, I actually did come across a stat the day before that he is statistically the best shot stopper in League Two at the moment, or certainly before this game. His stats were, you know, the whole expected goals ratio was the best in the league. So I'd actually sent it to a couple of people to say, oh, Liam Roberts is having a fantastic season. I feel like, to an extent, maybe we jinxed him. But it was a shot from distance. It's pitched in front of him, hasn't really read it. It didn't look like a particularly good pitch, and it's just squirmed through him. It's horrible. He never really got himself down in the way in which he needed to in order to cup the ball. Mistimed it slightly, and before you know it, it's one of those horrible, horrible ones that's just crept through him over the line. And yet, a moment that he'll certainly want to forget.
Yes, okay. To finish the show, Richard will touch on Diego Armando Maradona. 60 years old, sadly passed away yesterday. Argentina are in mourning. They have lost a football icon. The world has lost a football icon. Many tributes. We don't really need to elaborate too much on this because there are thousands of tributes all over social media, and I'm sure there will be documentaries in the coming days. But Peter Shilton tweeted eventually yesterday and did say, Maradona was the greatest footballer I ever played against, without question. This icon was taken far too soon. Maradona, of course, involved in one of the most controversial moments in goalkeeping history in football, 1986 World Cup.
He was indeed, and we'd love to get Peter Shilton on the show, wouldn't we? And that's we were close actually at one point. It's still very much on the agenda at some point. We'd love to get him on the show, and again, if we ever did it, it'd be really good to pick his brains on that particular moment. And facing Maradona, as you mentioned, some epic battles. And of course, it was that game that not only was it the hand of God, but of course, the second goal that he scored in that game was phenomenal. So to be able to speak to Peter Shilton at some point about those moments would be incredible.
Okay, Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.